We're doing a sequel. We're back by popular demand. Come on, everybody, strike up the band.
Negative possibilities are multiplying as we speak.
I'm sure I made a payment. It's about that bounce check.
I'm gonna steal the Declaration of Independence.
Merry Christmas. It's Where's the Damn Sequel Christmas Special. I mean, it's the summer, but, you know, yeah. Same thing.
Yeah.
We're talking The Polar Express. This is the podcast about movies that never got sequels. We're interested in why they didn't get sequels. What if they got a sequel now? What if they got rebooted? What do we want to see in a sequel? And why do we love them to begin with? We're talking about my favorite Christmas movie of all time, The Polar Express, with Hannah Friedel.
Hello.
My friend who is things.
I'm a friend, okay, and I am
things.
We've
done that joke already.
Well, it happened like a long time ago in the podcast canon, right?
I mean, they might be released back to back. You never know. Probably not.
Yeah.
Well, Hannah's back. She was on the Over the Hedge episode. We love having her here.
I love to be here. I love taking the bus back and forth. It's so fun.
We all love the bus, she says with a straight face. Polar Express is not about a bus. It's about a train. Choo-choo, choo-choo.
Choo-choo, like a train.
I've watched this movie every Christmas Eve since 2005, and I saw it in the cinema in 2004 with my dad.
Judging by the kind of person you are, I can totally see that.
It's a tradition. It's my Christmas Eve thing.
Fun or fluffy.
Polar Express.
Rough animation.
It's a really intense movie.
Christian values.
Yes, but it's a really intense movie, and I find the spirit of it really syncs up with my idea of what Christmas Eve should be about. I would never watch it after Christmas Eve or before Christmas Eve. December 24th, morning of December 24th. This movie gets me hyped to be around people, get that buzz of Christmas on Christmas Eve.
This movie, in terms of Christmas intensity, I think is second only to A Christmas Carol.
Yeah. No, absolutely. A Christmas Carol, the Jim Carrey version, effectively a sequel to this because it's the same director and the same animation style.
Yeah,
They work for me as a duo of films. I think this is a lot more... I have a much stronger connection to this because it came out when I was at an impressionable age. Mm-hmm. But I find
Did you read the book beforehand? Were you of the picture book?
No,
I was a child of the picture book.
That picture book does not exist
I think it was originally a series of pictures and they wrote a story around it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, this movie was directed by Robert Zemeckis. Robert Zemeckis is one of the kind of... really defining figures of 80s and 90s Hollywood, and he doesn't get the credit he deserves. This is the man who made Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's hugely influential in terms of what blockbusters became, and I don't think he gets half enough respect compared to your Spielbergs and your Ron Howards. He went into this phase in the 2000s of experimenting with motion capture technology, which resulted in The Polar Express, Beowulf, and later A Christmas Carol. I think this is the best film he's ever made. I think this film is a masterpiece. I think it's a crazy dream-like, dream experience, kind of fever dream thing.
I'm looking at the cast right now. Do you want to...
It uses Tom Hanks as the sort of spirit of America and of Christmas in a really interesting way, which I think is the best Tom Hanks has maybe ever been used in a film, where his likability is weaponized as a Christmas nostalgia tool, not just as, we love him, he's Mr. Disney, he's Mr. America. I find this film I find this film incredibly profoundly ingenious, and I think it works well.
But here, look at, he's credited as
at least five characters.
Hero Boy.
I can name them all.
Hero
Boy, Santa, the dad, the hobo, and the conductor.
Scrooge puppet and the boy's father.
I said the dad.
Oh, shoot, you did.
Santa, the dad, the boy, the hobo.
And he narrates it.
The conductor. And he narrates it as the boy,
as
an
well.
Adult.
Yeah.
Because he's doing it in first person. He goes when I was a child, my sister and I believed that it was all this
I stuff. Loved how he, can I tell you something that stuck with me from this film?
That's the point of the podcast.
More than a few things stuck with me. But one of the things is how I feel like he originated the tagline of Santa Claus calling himself Mr. C.
Yes, Mr. C.
He's found this on the seat of my sleigh. I'm like, you want it back, Mr. C.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's Tinashe was in this movie? What the hell?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Okay. And then this is also the origin of that kid who's like the fucking alt-right, like,
he's a Quentin Tarantino inspired.
Quentin Tarantino, yeah.
But
yeah.
He's what if Quentin Tarantino was a Gamergate kid?
Yeah.
Incel motherfucker, but he's only like 8, so we can't really call him an incel because he's 8.
Yeah, because he's not fucking anyway.
He's pre-sexual, but his condescension isn't exclusive to the girl.
Yeah.
So it's not quite sexism. He's just a dick in general.
But still, like, you know that when he gets older, he's going to start respecting men and respecting women less. Like, those two things are going to start falling apart.
He is a great character. I really am very fond of him. I like the way he engages. I like his whole, hey, you can't do that on this train. You can't do that on this train.
I love when he explains hot chocolate and he's like, hot chocolate.
Yeah, hot chocolate. It's set Santa Claus doesn't exist.
By the way.
Hey, Gary Shivers. I can actually think I do a really good impression of him.
That, you can. The hot chocolate song is like something children sing at concerts.
Oh, we got it. Terrible song.
It's the worst song in
Best
the film.
Best song in the film is Spirit of the Season.
Oh, okay.
It's the spirit of the sea. It's great. Actually, the Hot Chocolate Song is not the worst song. Because there is a song in this film that I fast forward through when I watch it every Christmas Eve because I hate it so much. And it's the stupid, sad song that the boy sings at the back of the train about when Christmas comes around. I hate it. I fucking hate that boy. He is a stupid little poor boy who can't enjoy anything.
Stupid little poor boy.
I like the representation of an impoverished family.
No, I do love that.
I like that they put a kid whose parents don't celebrate Christmas because they're poor because that's completely something I get and I've seen myself.
But
however,
he's
really fucking annoying. His refusal to be even attempt to be cheerful is more representative of a 20-year-old's personality than an 8-year-old's.
It is. I think that's the way he's written, but right now what you're essentially saying is, why can't this kid be happy? No. Pull yourself up by your rain boots,
The kid reminds me of myself now. He does not remind me of any 8-year-old I've ever encountered.
Like,
children do
not. Even if you are from an impoverished family.
Children always seek joy. I don't think children will ever deliberately be buried in a mood.
Went to school and especially like went to camp in San Francisco with a lot of kids who are from not impoverished, but, you know, kind of families who weren't as well off, less advantaged, whatever. The kids were always, I don't know, of
they
course,
were
kids
livelier
grow up,
than
they're,
him.
Yeah. Children always have that way. Yeah. It's not just like
he's written like a moody teenager, but he's meant to be 7 or 8. I don't
like,
think
like
he's
it works. Not just depressed.
Yeah.
Like children in that situation tend to, and I don't want to make a generalization because also I'm just like, I'm up here speaking from a place of privilege, but like they tend to kind of find joy where they can.
Yeah. I don't know. Like,
and
I
this
mean,
kid is like epically sad.
He's just not a fun person to have in the movie.
He's literally like in this fucking like amusement park Santa Claus land, and he's like, oh.
And he also expresses greed, which I don't like, where he tries to take like two presents or whatever, and I'm like,
it's
not
a real kind of capitalistic point of view. Like, everyone wants to be rich.
He's really badly written, and I think he's the worst part of this film, and I hate his song. However,
he's voiced by
Josh Hutcherson.
He is.
I'm almost certain.
Josh Hutcherson does the motion capture for the Hero Boy. Billy the Lonely Boy, as he's credited.
Does Josh have voice the Billy the Lonely Boy?
Is Jimmy Bennett.
Oh, shit. Okay, sorry. You're right, yeah.
I
always thought that was interesting.
And his singing is done by Matthew Hall. I don't know who these people are.
Now, it's interesting to me that Billy gets a name and...
Boy on Train,
Boy
I believe.
On Train.
Dylan
does not get the name.
Yeah. What would his name be?
The main boy in the film?
Tyler.
I mean, realistically, it's Tom because he's Tom Hanks.
Yeah. No, you're right.
He's a Tom. Like, he's a Thomas. Tommy.
Dude,
Tommy.
What is with like the idea of kind of the dramatic narrator not being named? Like, this is...
I think it's cool. It reminds me of The Witches.
Fight Club. The Witches.
The boy in The Witches never gets a name.
Yeah.
He's just called Boy, and I
Can
like
I
that.
Can I just real quick do a little tribute to that?
Do a bit of a Witches?
No, well, just talk? A little boy.
Do you want to hear some...
Grandma!
Would you like to
That's
hear? Do you want to hear Polar Express Witches Connection?
Yes.
Robert Zemeckis, director of this movie.
Uh-huh.
You know what he's currently in development on? The Witches.
Oh, yeah, because they're remaking The Witches.
And you know who's playing the main witch?
Josh Hutcherson.
Anne Hathaway.
You're fucking kidding.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to fuck the main witch.
You're going to fuck that movie.
I'm going to fuck that
movie. You're
going
to fuck the witches 2020.
You're going to have to download it illegally so I can masturbate to it in private. Okay.
Yes,
let's
fair.
Talk about
just
the Polar
Express. Wait for the DVD. Who else?
No, I don't have
Anne Hathaway
DVD
is like
poor.
A good choice, but like I'd rather. I mean, like you kind of. It's rude and impolite to not put Tilda Swinton in that movie.
Yeah, that's a hate crime.
It's a hate crime. Or at the very least, Meryl. But Meryl did that in Into the Woods.
Meryl did Into the Woods,
and Mary Poppins,
she
so.
Lost big time on that.
Yeah,
so
maybe not.
Maybe that was.
But
her
a Roald
decision.
Dahl witch and a Sondheim witch are so very different.
That's so true.
Because Roald Dahl actually writes human beings.
Yeah,
that
and
are
not
fun
like a
and not just like miserable fucking caricatures.
So that,
like
that into the, it was it's a stage play and it was never meant to be
yeah.
a.
I actually don't dislike that film. I think the James Corden Emily Blunt stuff's pretty strong.
It's very cute.
Yeah.
I do enjoy like the princes. I think they did a good job.
I think the Children Will Listen and stuff with Emily Blunt is very moving. I really like it. It's my favorite James Corden stuff ever. Like
that like part where they all die and they're singing that song to each other.
James Corden's like very good in that film.
Okay. Yeah. But
Polar Express.
Polar Express, baby.
So I saw this movie with my dad in November 2004 in the cinema. We went to an art opening after and we told this friend of my dad's that we'd seen the Polar Express and she said, oh, the new James Bond movie? A couple weeks later, my school took us to the cinema every Christmas for, like, they just took us to see a kid's movie in the cinema a couple days before Christmas, right?
Yeah,
so we did this every day. Every year I was in primary school, we did this. 2004, they were like, we're going to pick a movie this week. My mom is like, take them to see The Polar Express. It's good. Lucien's seen it. It's a nice, charming children's film. They were like, no, we're taking them to see this evil, violent kid's movie, which was known as The Incredibles, which is one of my favorite films. They took us to see The Incredibles. God. My mother was furious. She was like, that movie has punching in it. I instantly was like, Mom, sorry, The Incredibles is like the best film I've ever seen.
It is the best film.
And so I've spent my whole life having this weird conflict between my adoration for Polar Express and my adoration for The Incredibles, in spite of the fact that my mother kind of pitched them against each other. But
I
adore
those
both
two
those films.
They're in competition.
They're
in your
kind
brain.
Of my two favorite films. I've seen no film more than I've seen The Incredibles and The Polar Express. I've seen each of them over 20 times.
Mine was Finding Nemo. That was my children's film that was played over and over.
I love it. I just never had
I'm
the
DVD. I'm
reading
now. I'm actually very glad you're talking to me about this because I'm a history major.
A history major?
Trinity Nolan Dublin.
The history of Christmas and trains.
The history of Christmas. But also, I'm reading this thing and it's saying like, oh, it's all about... It kind of reflects like railroading architecture. That sounds weird, but
it does. Yeah, and the North Pole architecture is incredible.
Yeah, the buildings in the square at the city center are loosely based on the Pullman factory in Chicago. So it's very much like a reflection of this kind of destitute sort of. It takes place in like the
North
50s or 60s.
Yes, the
right?
The America of this film is kind of. Is very depressed.
It's great. It's very industrial.
Yeah, it is. And it's a really interesting way to do it. Like,
yeah.
You don't see that in
because the
Christmas
book was
movies.
In 1985 and it didn't really date itself.
Yeah.
Like there was nothing that really indicated except the fact that it was a fucking train.
Yeah. I think that the North Pole being really kind of abandoned when they were walking around and being kind of spooky.
Yeah.
It's a weird way to depict like the happiest place on earth in a kid's movie, but it also makes the ending so much more triumphant when they go assemble in the square around the tree and Santa Claus shows up. That scene makes me cry because the 20 minutes beforehand where the kids are exploring the city is so lonely.
Oh, I love that part.
That it just it's beautiful. Like, and they have the spooky Dean Martin song, Bing Crosby playing on the speakers and skipping and all. Yeah, it's so spooky. But when they get to the square and Spirit of the Season pops. Yeah. That scene is like, fuck, Christmas is fucking here.
It is. Also, the elves are
terrifying. They are terrifying. They're all a bunch of like little Gilbert Gottfried fuckers. Like,
they are.
They're all like sharp-faced, loud voices.
Very sharp.
Like, yeah.
They're very scary.
They're very sharp and scary. Scary,
but no,
spooky.
What was I?
I don't like. I don't like them.
I don't like them.
I don't like them.
You know what I don't like? I don't like the guy with the long beard.
Yes.
Remember on
the
guy
train?
On the train, they pull his beard and he goes. I don't like him.
That's you. Sorry. Yeah, if he pulled your nose.
He's the actor who plays him is dead. He died before the movie came out.
Wait, that's Mr. Noodle.
Yeah.
That's Michael. No.
Yeah.
You know what my favorite Michael film Jeter. Of Michael Jeter's is?
What?
Sister Act 2, Back
in
the
Habit.
Habit.
Oh, I was going to say Back in the Hood. Back in the Habit, sorry. I haven't seen it.
Do you want to know something? That film about a a Catholic school fallen upon hard financial times was actually filmed at one of the most affluent high schools in the city.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's crazy.
Michael Jeter. Gotta love him. And he howled a lot in this movie.
Yes.
At Caribou.
The soundtrack is so good. The soundtrack is
Josh Groban was all over this.
Josh Groban was all over this. I mean, he's... Josh Groban's someone I have a lot of...
I don't have time for Josh.
You don't?
I don't like these songs. I remember I was forced to...
I don't like the songs, but I don't mind him as an individual. I don't
know. He's fine, yeah. I have no reason to hate him. But, oh, songs, man. Ugh.
This movie made less money than Over the Hedge, and the budget was twice as large.
That's bullshit, because this movie is...
Fuck that.
Great.
I think the problem is that it was out at the same time as The Incredibles. Honestly, imagine putting these two movies out at the same time. Like, literally the two best animated films possibly.
Lucien as a child.
Possibly ever made. Yeah. Like, the fact is, like, I would have gone to see either of those five times in the cinema, but I could only see them once.
Yeah. Can we talk about just some of the elements of this movie that are so, like, visually, I don't know, just
so
plot points.
The best scene in this film is the ticket floating through the air.
Yes.
This scene lasts about 2.5
minutes.
I love
when it goes
the ticket goes missing. It goes into the bird's nest. It goes wolves run through the snow.
Gets in a snowball that rolls away.
Gets in a snowball that rolls away.
Yeah.
It's one of the most incredible single shots in any film. Ever.
I mean, it's one of the Incredibles. It's that incredible.
Yes, it's one of the Incredibles. It's nice shot, incredible. Mm. It's a new kid. But it's genuinely like one of the best shots in film history. I adore it. Like, it's so beautiful.
Beautiful.
It's so beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Like, it makes the shit with the fucking feather in Forrest Gump look so lame.
Oh my God.
Because it's like an expansion of that. That's so impressive.
Tom Hanks canon.
It's
They're
Zemeckis,
adding to
Zemeckis,
the things floating through
Zemeckis,
the air.
Zemeckis, Hanks canon. Yeah. I think it's intended
it's a
as a reference.
Yeah.
But it's so superior.
And then what was the other
the hobo,
one? The hobo.
The hobo.
Dude,
what a
that
guy.
Scene where, where he's skiing on top of the train.
Yeah.
And then also when he goes into the car that's just old puppets
and freaky toys. And Ebenezer Scrooge starts talking to him.
That
And then 5 years later, they made the Ebenezer Scrooge movie with Jim Carrey.
Fucking shit out of me.
Yeah.
I remember the child, I was like, I like him, you don't believe.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're fucking non-Christian.
What do you think the homeless guy is? Do you think he's an angel or
he's
do you think he's a ghost?
He's meant to represent doubt. You think he's
doubt.
A...
Yeah.
He's like the movie Doubt.
He's like the movie Doubt.
No, because you know
how you've seen the movie Doubt where Meryl Streep says doubt three times in one scene?
You know how you...
She goes,
doubt.
You don't have any doubt.
You know how you steal stuff from Blank Check?
Yes.
I steal stuff from the Bechdel cast.
Yes.
It's men and women. We're just fundamentally different. I'm just kidding. I do not believe that at all. Anyway, no, he's meant to represent, like... Because that's the whole thing. The enemy of this movie is... The kids' own doubts.
Yes, cynicism. Like,
cynicism. And that's what ruins the North Pole for him until, for some reason, because he's the one on the journey, he gets to get the fucking present.
Just because he's the main character of the movie?
You're just like, he literally did the worst. Yeah. All those kids were like, I'm so ready to believe.
Yeah,
I'm so strong and full of gumption.
He's just like a little prick.
And
like,
he's just like, oh no, man. And he gets the fucking, and he gets the gift.
I don't get it. And then he loses it because he's a fucking stupid.
Yeah, he's a fucking stupid.
He's a fucking stupid. But I think the hobo is beautiful. I love his appearance. I love his way he talks.
When he gives him that gross tar-like black coffee.
I love his like whole,
come here,
a nice cup of joe.
Like, get on the train, kid.
It's great Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
It's really good Tom Hanks.
No, the voice on it. And I also love how like, when he expresses doubt, the other thing that happens, like the train suddenly becomes more real.
You start to hear the actual, and he goes up on the roof and it's very scary.
And then
like,
when he tries to jump between cars, suddenly there's not a passage there. It's just the hook. And he's like, holy crap.
He
didn't even know
it's
coming.
Like, No, it's really well constructed.
No, when
like,
he starts throwing snow on his face and yelling, wake up, I was like, oh, this is too much. I was a very existentially tortured child. I would run into my parents' room at night being like, human life doesn't matter. Where does space end?
Yeah,
and like,
where's, what do you think of the relationship, of the friendship with the girl? Like, they kind of just... It's a bit shallow, but also,
I like how they don't make it like, oh, we're pairing these characters.
Exactly, like
it's about
like,
her. Because
there could easily, you could easily have her like giving him a kiss on the cheek at the end, like a lot of kids' movies would have.
Oh my god,
and not doing that's
style.
A good, not doing that's a good decision. Like,
yeah, no.
But also, they
I like how she. Well, remember on her.
The only reason for them to be friends is that they talk to each other.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the basis of the friendship.
No, but like, at the beginning, she's staring at him and the train is bouncing.
Yeah,
and she's
yeah.
I just bounced is what just happened. But then also she... I'm sorry, I'm very loud right now.
No, I'm loud.
I just had coffee. Her whole thing is like she keeps saying like, do you trust me? Like, do you want to come? Yeah, and that her whole thing is she's part of his test.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
And at the very end... Tom Hanks, you know, how he does the tickets, and he's like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hers says lead, and she's like, it says lead, like balloon. And he's like, lead.
I think she's basically just your one from High School Musical who wants to be president. It's just like, hey, look, little black girl wants to be president. Like, that's like a real...
You seem to have...
It's a motif.
Is it you or is it me or is it like that they're just like... The way black women in Hollywood, there's like a few tropey characters
that come up. I don't think it's me. I think I'm identifying them more
than
other people.
You are identifying them, and I'm like, okay.
I just, when there's a black female character in a kid's movie from 20 years ago, which isn't always the case.
Of course.
I tend to be suspicious of the motives more than I would be of another character in trying to figure out where the tokenism is going to come in. And sometimes there is none.
Yeah.
But then sometimes I'll find a reason to identify it,
I guess.
Do you think
this character had...
I don't think this character is tokenism.
No, I don't think that, because tokenism is just... having the character in the movie to express like a different point of view. And I don't think she really brings anything like...
I don't think she's a token character. I think that having her at the end be like... The whole like lead thing is a bit...
Yeah.
That's a bit obvious for her. But...
I mean, I kind of... I don't think that...
It's
fine. But here's the thing. I don't think it matters in this movie that like she's black.
No, it doesn't
like,
matter at
you're
all.
You're kind of looking for these, token black female characters. I don't think that that was any... Like she's a very...
She's no, when I was when I saw this film when I was 6 or 7, I never would have thought of that. Like, it
Have
mattered. Yeah.
She's just very much doing her own thing.
No, I agree.
It's not falling into any dangerous tropes.
No, I agree. I what else was I gonna say? Lead, and then I think just like her between the main boy and Billy, the fact that they have like a female friend when they're like knocking around the thing seems to be something that's character building for the two of them. Like the dynamics.
Well, the female friend is. Really good to Billy.
She's good to Billy, and it seems like her like sensitivity with Billy seems like something that builds him up as a character, and then her like her like hostility towards the Tarantino boy is very like he gets shut down by that as well.
Yeah.
So having having there be a female character
although
is
the
important.
Idea that like she's the one who has to initiate the emotional labor of like, oh, we should go talk to little poor boy.
But the main hero boy is so cold.
He
like,
is
he's
so
got
cold.
No emotional range. Yeah. Like his only range is like fear and jealousy.
He's
like,
got fear and he's got marbles in his pocket.
Basically.
And his pocket tears and they all fall out. Which I'm like it's a okay.
Polar Express sequel.
Oh, wow. Oh, Steven Tyler.
Steven Tyler!
He sings a song in this movie!
There's a video game, and within the game, the Ebenezer Scrooge puppet is the main antagonist of the game, and he attempts to prevent the children from believing in Santa by stealing their tickets and trying to stop them from making it to the North Pole. So the sequel, bring back Jim Carrey's Ebenezer Scrooge from A Christmas Carol as the villain
Ebenezer
and do a crossover.
Scrooge is definitely... Yeah!
The Polar Carol.
Oh, I forgot to mention.
A Christmas
I don't know
Express.
How much more time we have, but are we going?
Go. Keep going.
Okay, cool. I love Victorian Christmas. It's my favorite thing. I did a whole, like, I did a module on Victorianism last semester, so it's kind of my thing now. I just like, and I always have. I love that kind of weird, like, sort of austere English culture surrounding Christmas. So I do love A Christmas Carol in that sense, where it's full on. Charles Dickens, like hard times, just impoverished children, awful, but then also like brightness. I don't know. And I feel like that is kind of really one of the main themes of this movie is that it's a cold and austere film. It's about something very serious, but the whole thing is like you just kind of gotta have a blind faith about.
But I wonder how assembling the very distinct like British thing in A Christmas Carol with the very distinct American. Capitalism kind of side
well, I don't think
of
it's
Express.
Too
would that be
hard
an interesting contrast? Yeah,
Victorian England was
equally
also industrial.
Harsh,
like
industrial,
I mean, I don't want to get too English lit on you, but or any of on your esteemed listeners. I'm so sorry. I love you. But like, I don't know. Charles Dickens' Hard Times is all about like industrial England in like the Victorian era, and that's kind of what this is. It's supposed to be like a post-industrial wasteland, like fucking Detroit, like where the industry is just eating up all light and happiness.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that connects. You can make a really interesting thematic crossover there.
So Scrooge, the villain in Polar Express 2.
Big time.
Big time. And Brumbatch and Carey. And the conductor will this time be doing something different. Will we maybe just not have the same character, have Tom Hanks play someone different?
I think he needs to be in it.
He needs to be in it. He's kind of the face of the movie. Yeah.
This movie... Oh my God. Imagine Nick Kroll doing his Coach Steve voice as the conductor.
Get aboard the Polar Express. Hey, Jay, you want to go to Santa Claus? I love Christmas.
We're locking the doors. No one's leaving. More friends for me.
This is my train. Who is this?
This movie made...
You gotta believe in it, baby.
$311 million worldwide and a budget of $165. Opening weekend, it opened in second place, baby. So...
To what? Second to Incredibles?
One, two, three, four, five. Five, six... Seven movies opened this weekend.
Wow.
This was November 12th, 2004.
Let's
so,
hear it.
23 million opening weekend for Polar Express. The movie is number one, is 50 million. In its second weekend, is The Incredibles.
Of course.
Just what a range of choice.
Yeah.
Okay, number three, we have a movie that I don't know what this is. Oh, I genuinely have no idea.
What is it?
Number three is a movie called After the Sunset with Pierce Brosnan and Don Cheadle and Woody Harrelson. It's like an old man. Like it's like what if Pierce Brosnan had to pull off one final heist?
Jesus.
It's not good. Number four is Seed of Chucky.
Is that like his child?
I don't really care.
What a way to name a movie. No. Like instead of Son of Chucky.
Seed of Rambo.
Seed of the Polar Express. The
number,
Polar Express.
Where's the damn sequel?
Chucky.
Seed. Number five is a romantic comedy. It's kind of British. It's a sequel. It's a very rare.
Is it complicated?
No, it's not. It's a rom-com sequel. Okay. Very unusual. Female lead character.
Oh, is it Bridget Jones' Diary, Edge of Reason?
Correct.
Whoa, I did
it. Got one. Number six is a biopic of a black singer-songwriter.
Is it Ray?
It's Ray.
Whoa, two in a row, baby.
Number seven is a horror movie. I think like it's a remake, so like Sarah Michelle Gellar is probably in this.
Jesus.
And it's a remake of like a Japanese one.
The Ring?
No, the other one.
Shit, what's the other one called again?
The Grudge.
The Grudge.
Number eight is the first ever kind of like torture porn movie. Like there's like nine of these.
Oh, Final Destination?
No, the other ones.
What is it?
These ones are like just people being tortured. Like.
Oh, God. I can't think of it.
Saw.
Oh.
10 is Jude Law.
I came, I saw The Polar Express because I didn't want to see Saw.
10 is a Jude Law like sexy man movie.
Oh, yeah.
He's a real sexy man. It's Sounds a remake of a Michael Caine movie with a Burt Bacharach song.
Oh, Talented Mr. Ripley?
Alfie. Number 11.
Oh,
number gross. 11 is an animated movie we've covered on Where's the Damn Sequel? From 2004. It's got animals of
Madagascar?
No, the year before. It's the other one. There's no sequel to it.
No, there's tons of sequels to Nemo. Oh god.
It's not Nemo's not a far shout though.
Okay. Let me think.
It's set in a similar environment.
Oh, the sea? Oh, Shark Tale.
Correct. 12 is a Thomas Hayden Church and Paul Giamatti wine movie that I told you about earlier.
Thomas Hayden Church.
I told you about it on the last episode. It's called Sideways. And then
how I would like to be taken by Thomas Hayden Church.
At 17, we have Team America World Police.
Okay.
At 20, we have Surviving Christmas. At 25, Napoleon Dynamite. 26, Finding Neverland is a new entry.
Napoleon Dynamite came out that year.
Yeah. Finding Neverland opened in 26th place in 8 screens. The Bourne Supremacy, and then Kinsey opened in 29 on 5 screens. Kinsey's a pretty good movie.
I don't know.
Liam Neeson plays Kinsey.
Oh, I'd love to see
Laura Linney's the wife.
Kinsey's
the wife. And then 32 is Spider-Man 2, which has now been open for 20 weeks.
Okay.
And it's still in the top 30. And then iRobot, Shaun of the Dead, Without a Paddle, and Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow, The Notebook, The Village.
It's funny that we have two pieces of media out, one called Schitt's Creek and the other called Without a Paddle.
It is interesting, yeah.
Anyway, should we talk more about Polar Express or are we finishing up?
I think I've done my Polar Express bit.
This was so much more dry, probably because you take this film very seriously.
I take this film very seriously. I don't want to make fun of it because I love it.
I want to make fun of it because it's so strange. It's a fever dream. And you said that yourself. It's so just bizarre.
It was nominated for 3 Academy Awards.
Yeah, I get that.
Sound editing, sound mixing, and original song for Believe. How was it not nominated for visual effects?
Oh, I remember one of the weird things where he's like, oh, Santa isn't real. Mm-hmm. Is he sees an animatronic Santa Claus in a shop window, and then he sees the gear in the back.
Yeah.
Because he's looking at it, and he's like, whoa, what is that?
Yeah, yeah.
And then his face falls, and he shakes his head, and he's like, no.
He kind of jumps between naivety and very sharp cynicism very rapidly.
It's weird. Kind of like, you knew it was fake. I don't know. I get the effect that they're going for, but it wasn't the strongest.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right.
Anyway.
Choo-choo.
Choo-choo. It's a truck.
See you at Christmas.
Bye.
Bye.